Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Ezra Taft Benson wanted to run for the United States presidency. How did that end? So we'll talk about the end of his political aspirations with Dr. Matt Harris. Check out our conversation. I'd also like to remind you to please subscribe on our website and help support projects like this. Go to gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button. For just $10 a month, I'll send you a transcript of this right as soon as we've got it finished here. You'll be the first one to receive it. Or if you'd like a written copy kind of like this, by the way, this is our first part one interview with Matt, go to gospeltangents.com/shop. You can get a copy of that. Or we'll send you, for just $15 a month, we'll send you the latest transcripts, paperback version. Now check out our conversation.
Elder Benson decides at this time to run for the presidency. And it's no surprise that he's got strong feelings about the civil rights movement and that it's fomented by communism. So not a coincidence that the Birchers will create this secret organization called the Committee of 1776. It's run by Birchers. It's got Birch footprints all over it. But we can't reveal ourselves as Birchers because it's too controversial. And they say this in their board meeting. If we say it's us, then people will be turned off by it. So do not mention that Robert Welch or anybody's behind this. But it's really mostly Birchers doing this. So they draft Benson as their presidential candidate, and they draft a man named Strom Thurmond, who was a Dixiecrat in the 1940s. He split off the Democratic Party because he was so pro-segregation and didn't like the civil rights tack that President Harry Truman was taking. And so Thurmond joined the Dixiecrat Party as a spinoff from the Democrats in the 40s. And in 1957, Senator Thurmond, he'll eventually join the Republican Party, I might add. But in 1957, Thurmond is famous for giving the longest filibuster against the Civil Rights Act in American history. It's like 24 hours long, gives this massive filibuster. So anti-civil rights, diehard segregationist, this is the person that Benson's going to run with on the ticket. And clearly these men have a lot, at least similar views about racial equality. And without going into the details, the ticket, it fizzles. It doesn't raise enough money. Thurmond never had the buy-in, to be honest, that Benson had. Benson was alarmed by it and just giddy about it. And President McKay gives the green light for him to do this, by the way, which is interesting, over the protest of Hugh Brown and some other leaders. Joseph Fielding Smith was really upset by it. He needs to come back into the 12. His view is not in politics. And even though President Smith is very conservative, he just had no patience for, nor Harold Lee. Harold Lee didn't either. They didn't have any patience for Benson's politics. So anyway, even though maybe politically they were similar, you know, in terms of their conservative views or values, but they just thought that the Birch stuff was just dividing the church. It was no good. And anyway, so the ticket with Thurmond fizzles. And so almost to the month when it fizzles in the summer of 1967, there's another segregationist candidate who comes calling, a guy named George Wallace, the governor of Alabama. And Elder Benson and his son Reed, they fly out to Birmingham, and they have a three-hour meeting with George Wallace. And Benson tells Robert Welch, he's a great guy. We have a lot in common. And Benson tells Governor Wallace, I need to get the support of President McKay. I can't do this unilaterally. And President McKay knew that there was some pushback with the Thurmond when he gave the green light to run with Strom Thurmond. Some of the apostles told him, including Hugh Brown, this is stupid, don't do this. And McKay is an old Scottish man, you know, he had a little temper. Don't tell me what to do. So, and the brethren were sensitive to that, including Hubie Brown. But anyway, so he goes back to Salt Lake and tells George Wallace, or tells President McKay, you know, highly confidential meeting. They want me to be the presidential candidate with Wallace. And this is on the independent ticket, because there's a Republican Mormon who might wrap up the Republican nomination. So we've got two high-profile Mormons running for the same candidate.
This is George Romney.
It's George Romney, right. And what really muddies the water is there's a number of brethren who support George Romney and not Benson. That's another challenging issue.
And Marion G. Romney is in the quorum.
Right.
How is he related to George?
Cousins.
Okay.
Yeah, cousins, yeah. Anyway, so we've got that dynamic going on too, you know. And Romney's gotten priesthood blessings from President McKay, from other people about running, and they tell him, we're going to run and we support you. President McKay supports George Romney, tells him this. So anyway, Benson comes back and gives him the line about George Wallace and McKay. At this point, it's an independent party. So Wallace leaves the Democratic Party and becomes an independent, a third party, essentially. And McKay, there's lots of discussion among the First Presidency about should we let this happen. And you know where Brown stands. Absolutely not. This is the guy that said segregation now, segregation today, segregation forever. I mean, he was a diehard segregationist. And President Brown rightfully noted that this will damage the church. If you let this guy, if Elder Benson run with this diehard segregationist, we're already taking some big heat from the BYU boycotts and from our priesthood, our teaching, our racial teachings. This is not going to be helpful. And they're very well aware of the optics of all this. So anyway, the other thing that they're fearful of is third parties. Like, third parties are just extremists. They don't go anywhere. And so they tell Elder Benson, they said, third party tickets are extremists. Elder Benson counters back, don't you know the prophet Joseph? He was going to run as a third party candidate in the spring of 44. And the brethren aren't persuaded by that line of reasoning. And so they tell Elder Benson, no, we need you here in the 12. This is where your calling is. This is where God wants you. And Elder Benson, his heart's in politics. He really, and I'm to be perfectly candid, he feels like this is his duty, his apostolic duty to save the Constitution. Every apostle has a, I guess they call it an apostolic duty or a charge or a commission. Clearly his was to warn against big government, to warn against liberalism and labor unions. That's what he believed. And when Latter-day Saints had questions about government issues, including, you know, the Cold War or liberalism or, you know, government policies, it was always, go see Elder Benson. He's the expert on the freedom issue. And if you had a question about something else, you know, a doctrinal question, go see Joseph Fielding, right? So they each had their own little areas, and probably to this day I would think that some of the 12 have those similar kinds of things. Things that they want to be known for. President Benson later, the Book of Mormon, too. Anyway, so they say no to George Wallace, and Benson's he's a persnickety guy. And I really like him. He's so interesting. I don't like his politics, but I like him. He's so sincere. But he tells Wallace, he said, no, the president won't go for this. But this is what I think you should do. He read your letter, by the way, and you still didn't persuade him. Let's bring you to Salt Lake City. Maybe you can meet with him. Anyway, so they bring him into Salt Lake City, and and President McKay didn't reveal his cards, you know. But then after the meeting was over, Elder Benson says, well, what did you think? The answer is the same as I told you last time. No. And so this is like September of 68. I mean, this is late in the game to be choosing a vice presidential candidate.
Right, yeah, because the election's in November.
Right.
It's just 2 months away.
Right, and he George Wallace, apparently he's this fickle guy. He can't seem to decide who. And Benson's his first choice, for sure. But he looks at, he even toys with Colonel Sanders of Kentucky Fried Chicken claim. He thinks about putting Colonel Sanders on the ticket. And he settles on a military guy named Curtis LeMay, who is known to
he
be.
He was in the Cuban Missile Crisis, big with that. Yeah, I remember that.
And he's one of those guys that we would say is hot-tempered.
Yeah.
Nuke them all! And so he was clearly a controversial person.
Well, and LeMay had some big issues with Kennedy over the Cuban Missile Crisis, as I recall. That was a very interesting movie.
Benson thought LeMay was a good choice. And campaigns hard for them. He solicits money from donors and arranges for LeMay to come to BYU in the spring of 68.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So he gives a form, I guess they call them.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, and then just to finish Elder Benson's presidential ambitions. He's turned down with Wallace. So let me back up. He tries with in 1960, and they put the kibosh on that pretty quick. He wanted to do something with Nelson Rockefeller, a moderate Republican from New York. And President McKay didn't think that was no. And then, but he does give the green light for Thurmond just to see where it will lead. And it doesn't lead anywhere. tries with Wallace. President McKay says no. The racial issue is too intense. This guy's a segregationist. He's controversial. Plus, it's a third-party ticket. Wackos do third parties. That's essentially what they say. And then by the early 70s, there's the American Independent Party. It's basically run by Birchers. They're trying to draft Elder Benson again. This is kind of controversial because by this point, Elder Benson's now the president of the Quorum of the Twelve. And, let me back up.
What year is this?
Let me back up. Before he's the president, I jumped ahead real quick, missed a step. When Harold Lee's the church president, somebody from the Utah Independent Party, they called Harold Lee. And the Utah Independent Party, it's a third party made up of Birchers, essentially, and they have a Birch platform. And that's the same party, by the way, that Clive and Bundy belonged to.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And also the guy that got killed, Lavoie Finnegan, whatever his name is, Finnegan. Yeah. Anyway, they're members of the Utah Independent Party. Hmm. And so when Harold Lee was the president, somebody from the American Independent Party contacted him and inquiring about Elder Benson, and he was indignant. That the story goes, I don't know if this is true or not, but the story that I heard was that he hung up on the guy. Don't ever call me again. Oh, Harold Lee was tired of the politics. I mean, that's another whole story. So I talk about all the general authorities who pushed back on Elder Benson. That's pretty clear by writing, and how they pushed back on him, the Birch stuff. President Benson, or President McKay, allows this Birch stuff to continue, but they put the kibosh on it when President McKay dies.
Okay.
Yeah, very clearly. Harold Lee says, we can't do anything about Benson's Birchism, as they called it, as long as the president's alive. President McKay was his protector. And even though President McKay had significant criticisms of the Birch Society, he allowed him to give all these anti-communism sermons. And but when Joseph Fielding Smith was the president, the dominant voice of that administration was Harold B. Lee. And Harold B. Lee made it very clear to Ezra Taft Benson that there's no more discussions about Gadianton robbers, secret combinations, nothing like that. You're done. And in 1972, Elder Benson, I guess, thinking that this is his apostolic responsibility, he gave a talk. And he recommends a Birch book in General Conference. And he talks about Gadianton Robert. Didn't listen to a word anybody had said. And Elder Lee is just indignant. And they cut the Birch reference out of the sermon, the General Conference sermon. And they warn him once again, you know, that you need to stop this. This is damaging the church. And Elder Benson's really upset by this. But so he ceases his Birch, his sermons in General Conference after President Lee rebukes him. And when President Lee, when Harold Lee becomes the church president, then Benson's on a very short leash. And when Harold B. Lee dies, Spencer Kimball becomes the church president. And this is a man that Benson knows well. They were called into the quorum together. And Benson, or Kimball's a very small, you know, diminutive man. And Benson feels like he can really push the limits with President Kimball, and he does. And in 1974, he gives an interview with a reporter, and he says that you can't be a good Democrat and a good Latter-day Saint, at least as I understand the gospel. That's what Benson says. And of course, it creates a firestorm among Mormon liberals. Because in Benson's mind, it was an evolutionary process. First a liberal, then a socialist, then a communist. So he's telling people you can't be a Democrat and a liberal and be a good Latter-day Saint. And so all these Mormon liberals complain, and President Kimball calls him in. He says, "What's going on?" And President Benson reaffirms what he said to the journalist, and President Kimball says, "You have a much higher calling here as a member of the 12. Forget about politics. Don't do this. This is hurtful. It's divisive. Don't do this." And anytime you talk about people where it's divisive to the church, that should be a cue that you shouldn't do it. Anyway, a year later, he does it again, calls him in again, chastises him. And finally, in 1978, this is really interesting, President Benson, who's now President of the 12, he reads a Birch article. He subscribes to Birch literature. He reads this Birch article written by a man named Alan Stang. And the article, the substance of the article is that the commies have infiltrated all three branches of the U.S. government, including the legislature, the Supreme Court, and with Jimmy Carter. They're all
Jimmy Carter's a communist?
Yeah. They're all governed by overrun by commies.
Mm-hmm.
And so Benson is just, he reads this article alleging that the three branches of government have been infiltrated by communism. Keep in mind the Cold War is still going strong. He sends this article with a lengthy note to a guy named William Webster, who's head of the CIA. So Hoover had died 6 years earlier. Webster was his replacement. You've got to read this article.
The FBI.
Yeah, FBI director named William Webster. So he sent, so Benson identifies himself. I'm the former cabinet secretary. And, of course, they knew who he was. They had a big file on him. And you should read this, and we need to talk about this. When can we schedule a meeting? And the FBI, they know his history of all of this stuff, and so they direct their secretary, you know, we're not going to schedule a meeting. This is not what we want to talk about. The Birch people are radical. We want nothing to do with them. But he writes back a cordial note, and the secretary says he's busy, Mr. Webster's busy, or something like that. Same thing that Hoover used to say to William Benson to request meetings there, too. He's busy. They just didn't want to talk about the Birch Society. So anyway, in June 28th, 1978, this is interesting because it's just a few weeks after the priesthood revelation.
Yeah, just 2 weeks before.
Yeah, he's sending this information to the William Webster, the new FBI director. And I can't help but think that, goodness gracious, Elder Benson, of all the things going on in the church, June of 78, this is what's on your mind. Anyway, so he sends this to William Webster, and Webster doesn't comment, doesn't allow for the meeting. And who knows if he even read the article. Underlings, I'm sure, read it, because what they would do with the FBI, the underlings would read all the stuff they get, and then they would write written reports to the boss. And if they thought it was worth the boss's time to read, then they would say, you need to read this for yourself. But most of the time, it would just be written memos. If you've ever been to FBI files, you'll see that a lot. Well, anyway, so with that context, Benson gives this very forthright and frank General Conference address that fall in 78. He doesn't mention the Carter administration. He doesn't mention the Supreme Court. Doesn't mention the legislature. But he says essentially that there are secret combinations in our government. And he's very, I mean, it's really just, it's Benson without a filter. And President Kimball reads the address and orders that this address not be published in the church's international journal, that they don't want it published. Keep in mind President Kimball's mission, or his vision. He wants to get into African nations. He also wants to get into communist nations. When the scriptural mandate says, preach the gospel to every kindred nation tongue, it doesn't mean except for communist nations and black African nations. It means everywhere. So President Kimball finds this kind of sermonizing damaging to the church. And he agrees not to publish it. But what do? You have to publish it in the Ensign, you know, and they do. So you can Google it and see the sermon. But when you read about there are secret combinations in government, the context is that Birch article that warning that the three branches of government have been infiltrated by the commies. And so also at the same time as this General Conference stuff's going on, Benson will send a book he wrote in 1962. It's called The Red Carpet, The Royal Road to Communism. And it was a best-selling Latter-day Saint book that essentially argued that, just what I told you earlier, start with liberalism, move to socialism, and finally you're on the royal road to communism. And so in the late 70s, he will purchase literally dozens of copies of that book and send them to every member of the U.S. Congress and Senate, warning that there is an internal subversion in the U.S. government. Read my book. It tells you all about it. And he sends it to his good friend Barry Goldwater and other members. So anyway, I'll finish the story here with this conspiracy stuff. So Elder Benson, in February of 1980, gives this very, very difficult devotional address at BYU. It's been talked about by some scholars. Mike Quinn talks about it a little bit. And it's called 14 Fundamentals in Following the Prophet.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And if you don't know the context of all the stuff we've been talking about, this sermon may not mean much. But with President Kimball rebuking Elder Benson on at least two occasions for his public expressions of, you know, partisanship, and of course all the stuff in the 1960s with the Birch Society, Elder Benson gives a speech in which he says that the living prophets are more important than the dead ones. And he says that the prophet can speak for God even in civic matters. And of course, to people who followed Elder Benson's career, that creates a challenge because they see the tea leaves dangling in the air, that this guy is going to be the church president and he's going to birchify the church. He's going to move it to the right. He's going to have this church endorsement of the Birch Society, essentially. So anyway, the LDS liberals at the University of Utah, Utah State, and BYU, they flood the First Presidency's office with letters. I mean, dozens of letters. A number of people are bothered by the speech. They see this as an anticipation towards his own forthcoming presidency. Also keeping in mind that President Kimball's not doing well health-wise. So they complain, and President Kimball, who's very sensitive to criticism, calls in President Benson to account for this speech. And he says that you need to apologize to the Quorum of the Twelve for this speech. This is not right. The church, what I say in politics, President Kimball said, or what I say about civic matters, including even politics, it doesn't mean I'm speaking for God. I'm speaking for myself. So we don't want to give the impression that prophets speak for politics, because that's just not the way this works. At least that was President Kimball's sentiment. So anyway, he has Elder Benson apologize before the entire Quorum of the Twelve. And President Benson, who's not a guy that likes conflict, he did not think that the apology was sufficiently contrite. So he has him come back a week later and to apologize in front of all the general authorities. And I have in my possession a document that's a public apology. It's about a paragraph long. Allegedly it was written by Elder Benson. I don't know if Elder Benson wrote it, but it was an apology, a public apology. And I've looked and looked and looked. I don't think that it was ever published anywhere, so I don't think that it went anywhere. But there wasn't a public apology that he wrote too. So anyway, that's the last time that he really talks about politics and Birch stuff in a public setting.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Matt Harris. Many of you know that Gordon B. Hinckley was a counselor to President Benson and served under him. In our next conversation with Matt, we'll talk more about how President Hinckley influenced President Benson with regards to civil rights.
But clearly by this point in time, the church is trying to, President Hinckley in particular, was trying to move the church to a more moderate position. And with civil rights, with a lot of things. And the Birch stuff was just so divisive.
We'll have a transcript out shortly on this conversation. And you can purchase individual copies at our website at gospeltangents.com/shop. If you want to be the first to get a copy, please subscribe on our website for just $10 a month. I'll send it to you first as a PDF. Or if you'd like a physical copy, for $15 a month, I'll be happy to send that to you as well. You can get our transcripts at our Amazon.com author page. I've got a link here, but just do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview and you should be able to find a bunch of them there. Please subscribe at patreon.com/gospeltangents. For $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview uncut. And for $10, you can get a PDF copy. We've also got a $15 tier where if you want a physical copy, I'll be the first to send it to you. So please subscribe at Patreon or on our website at gospeltangents.com as well. For our latest updates, please like our page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. And also check our Twitter updates at gospeltangents as well. Please subscribe on our Apple Podcasts page at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. Or you can subscribe on your Android device. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents. Thanks again for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.